So, welcome everyone. Wonderful to be here with you this evening, continuing our investigation of this book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, by Shunryu Suzuki. We've been at this for quite some time. I was wondering if there's still anything left to say about this book. And yet, there are still more chapters, so here we go. And this is from the third section that we have been talking about, this third week of our coming and going session here at our wonderful temple. And the section is called Calmness. And actually, I'm not going to so much talk about calmness because I'm not really an expert on that subject. My true nature is not really all that calm. No one ever accuses me of being too laid back. But there's a couple of really interesting points in this section, I thought, and I would like to read you a couple of paragraphs. Let's see, I think it's kind of, yeah, it's the end of this section on calmness. And Suzuki Roshi says, "In our everyday life, we are usually trying to do something, trying to change something into something else, or trying to attain something. Just this trying is already in itself an expression of our true nature. The meaning lies in the effort itself. We should find out the meaning of our effort before we attain something." So Dogen said, we should attain enlightenment before we attain enlightenment. It is not after attaining enlightenment that we find its true meaning. The trying to do something in itself is enlightenment. When we are in difficulty or distress, there we have enlightenment. When we are in defilement, there we should have composure. Usually we find it very difficult to live in the evanescence of life, but it is only within the evanescence of life that we can find the joy of eternal life. By continuing your practice with this sort of understanding, you can improve yourself. But if you try to attain something without this understanding, you cannot work on it properly. You lose yourself in the struggle for your goal. You achieve nothing. You just continue to suffer in your difficulties. But with right understanding, you can make some progress. Then whatever you do, even though it is not perfect, will be based on your inmost nature, and little by little, something will be achieved. Which is more important, to attain enlightenment or to attain enlightenment before you attain enlightenment? To make $1,000,000, or to enjoy your life in your effort, little by little, even though it is impossible to make that million? To be successful, or to find some meaning in your effort to be successful? If you do not know the answer, you will not even be able to practice Zazen. If you do know, you will have found the true treasure of life. So, we we've been talking quite a bit in these little studies about Zen not being a self-improvement project, and how it isn't actually necessary to make changes to ourself or the world in order to find these Dharma gates, these entry points into this Zen life that we have been talking about. And yet here Suzuki says something somewhat different. He says, just this trying is already in itself an expression of our true nature. So what I take from that is we don't even actually need to find a way to stop all of our trying. As David said in his talk earlier, this small self of ours that is always rushing around looking for ways to improve ourselves and the world is basically just trying to be helpful. Such a sweet thing, you know, this desire to improve, to be helpful. And the problem is that this small self, as David said, all of its strategies involve greed, anger, and ignorance. This wanting more. But this wanting more is not actually a problem that blocks us from from finding this true way. He says, the trying to do something in itself is enlightenment. So, this last section about, you know, what is important to us? Is it the attainment of something? Can we find something that is going to make us happy, whether it's enlightenment or a pile of money or whatever the object of our desires might be, success? Or perhaps it is right here, in the middle of our efforts, the middle of our actual struggles, our life. David earlier today also mentioned this Ji Juyu Sanmai, this samadhi of self-receiving and samadhi of self-fulfilling. We come to the Zendo and we sit many long hours on these cushions. And for me, one of the really important things about this is this receiving myself just as I am. This self is how this Laura used the phrase a reservoir of infinite possibilities, this Buddha nature. Our life is how that reservoir of infinite possibilities is expressing itself right here now in the form of me, in the form of you. Without our lives as separate individuals, there's no way for these infinite possibilities to be expressed. They are expressed right here in the human beings, the form beings, the grass beings, all of the fences and walls and grasses and trees are expressions of this great ocean, these infinite possibilities. And so in the Dogen piece that we read from Genger Koan, he's talking about the fish being life, and the bird being life, air being life, and water being life, the whole universe being life, expressing itself as all these individual, unique things. And he says, when you find your place where you are, practice enlightenment occurs. Actualizing reality. When you find your way at this moment, you become actualized reality. What other place could we find it other than right here? And whether we ever actually attain anything or not, if we can receive our lives and make use of what it is that we receive. There's this possibility of finding some fulfillment, whether or not we ever actually attain something other than what we already have is, in some sense, irrelevant here. To have done our best, to have met our life with all of its challenges and restrictions, this is what it means to be alive. All of the beauty and the pain and the suffering and the joy, all wrapped up together, appearing right now in the form of us and the world. One thing. Thank you. So, this is the opportunity for our Dharma dialogue. Please sit comfortably, and any questions or comments that you might have, or, welcome, and a service to the Sangha.
The teaching that you said towards the end, especially that if we're not going to do it here, if we're not going to find it here, where would we find it? Yeah. The mind is infinitely productive around where else we could find it. And it's, sometimes it's unbelievable that it could be here in this condition that we're in now. Mm. I really loved the way you said it, and I heard in your delivery, you know, there's a conviction there. Mm. You really have discovered that, and I think I've only discovered it from trying to avoid it. Right? Once we give up, this is here the path unfolds, mm-hmm. right here. And thank you for that.
I'm wondering about paradoxes. Mm. Either they can't exist, or they're plentiful all around us. I don't understand that.
Mm. Me either.
I think if people laughed when you said it, I'm wondering about paradoxes, because it's only the mind that can wonder about paradoxes, you know, the cognitive brain. There's a way of actually engaging with the world where we just enter into this multiplicity of views.
So is it a word that was created really of no actual substance?
Like all words, yes. Yeah. It refers to something. It refers to a kind of contraction of the mind. You know, it seems to be like this, but it's really like this, but it's... No, it's like that. And Dogen really plays with that quite a bit, because he throws out different views, right? It's, you know, the piece we read tonight from the Genjo Koan, it says this, and then it says that, and then it says that, and then it says some other thing. And if you really try to follow it, you'll be lost.
So might we use the word nonsense?
That's another word that the mind would use. Yeah. So this is not logical, and it's not rational. And most of us have learned to be rational and logical, and that's gotten us to where we are, right? But it won't allow us to actualize the awakened nature. It actually gets in the way of that. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that it's not wonderful that we can think. We have one of our regular students who is a philosophy professor. And whenever she encounters these Zen things, her philosophical mind kicks in and she spins around. And then at a certain point she drops down. It's wonderful to see it. Sometimes it happens publicly. And it's just kind of a thrilling thing. You know, we get tired of the spin, and then boom. And she's an expert. She makes her living investigating this. And then boom.
I wonder if this might be an example that this conversation is itself a cone.
Everything could be seen that way. Yeah, yeah, I think so, Andy.
And the other thing that occurs to me, so in what Steve read, Suzuki talks about how the trying itself is the fullness of it. So maybe you should really try to understand, like really, really try, and enjoy your trying. Like this is life appearing. Paradox, is it? And this is, of course, what we all do in our own way. And you may never understand, but to appreciate, to receive, this is the life of mind trying to grasp it, and the fullness of that. So you are manifesting the Buddha Dharma flawlessly right here, without understanding.
Well, this conversation leaves me with some satisfaction.
Huh? I'm sorry. We haven't done our job. No, I'm great.
I'll never forgive you.
There you go.
I'm feeling better now.
Join.
Talk about illogical. So I've really been trying to show up here for a couple few weeks now, and going back and forth and being still and not still in other ways, and then lots of activity and with my memory troubles and my concentration troubles and just more than usual, I am watching videos of animals helping animals and people helping animals. It's like I can't
just
stop.
In real life or
in real life.
Oh, okay.
Not in your head.
So I'm at home, I'm like, I'm doing a million things, and then the list is so huge, and I'm just watching animals help animals and people help animals. And animals help people. It's YouTube. And I enjoy this anyway. You know, there are some sad aspects, but I don't really watch the ones that are super tragic. I watch the ones where I see so much possibility and I see so much activity within the possibility and all the choices within the possibility. And the one that I watch one today and I can't get it out of my head is this dog on some surface. You can't see the periphery, but there's all these fish that are alive, like maybe in the 5 foot square area there's 6 fish, and they're like this big, and there's water on the thing, and with his nose he's covering them with water. He's taking the little bit of water that's on the thing and he's covering them with water, and they're kind of aware of it, and they're probably not going to make it, but who knows, it's okay, it's just this little thing that isn't happening anymore, just it's TV and I'm watching it. And just the whole, like, was that dog trained to do that? Maybe, maybe not. The fact that it can do that is really some strange encouragement to me. The fact that I'm watching these things does not make the kind of sense that I'm used to trying to make with the use of my time. And,
so, Joanne, maybe it doesn't so much matter, you know, about the dog, right? But this reminds me very much of what it means to be a bodhisattva, right? For us to go out into the world and to use our life to be helpful and to find meaning through this moving out into the world and trying, right? Making effort. This effort to do something useful, to find fulfillment in our activity, right? And I think you're pointing to that with this story, right? That this is a big deal for us. This you know, taking of a vow to save all beings, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joanne.
And you know, it's so wonderful. Both Andy and Joanne, in a way, you've just showed us your minds. Right, and if everything really is it, then the trying to figure it out and the wondering why I'm clicking on the YouTube, that's it. That's actually Genjo Koan manifesting itself. And you know, in those moments when we start to get lost in them, because that happens, and I think the two of you expressing this, other people in the room can identify. You know, all of us have moments where we're just trying to figure it out, or we're so overwhelmed that we're taken by what, you know, it's called clickbait. I love that name. Mm-hmm. I'm going to click. Oh, there's another one. Click. Oh, there's another one. Click. That's what it's like in Zazen. You know, we spend some time trying to figure stuff out, or we spend some time pursuing, you know, going down the mind road. And then saying them out loud, having them witnessed and responded to by us, makes some spaciousness around them. And that's part of what happens in Zazen as well. And then there's this kind of wonderful thing that we can also do. Remember that getting caught in thinking or getting caught in distractions is not a bad thing. And there's other stuff going on too, like sitting in a chair in a room with other people, like breathing. like that. There's this too, this body, right? There's this too. And there is something. It's very hard to, I know it myself, to not go for the clickbait. But it's like you can't stop your hand. And then you realize you can. And you can just shut the computer. You know, or you can feel what it's like to click endlessly. Really thoroughly. Like David was encouraging Andy to really try to figure this out. Click, 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 click. Usually, if I keep going that far, I feel sick. And so you get sick. So there's a way of kind of running it out. Just run it out. There's that famous story of Zorba the Greek, who was addicted to strawberries. And he decided to get 3 bushels of strawberries and eat them all. And then he threw up and was sick for days. And then he was no longer addicted to strawberries. This is a little dangerous to say, because then it sounds like if I do it so much, I'll stop. But we know that's not true either. But to really get sick of it, I think, is very good.
Could you apply any of this to Donald Trump's policy statements?
I think it's identical, right? It makes me sick. Only in that sense. I'm sure that David heard Steve has something else to say.
I mean, the idea that it doesn't have to make logical sense. We can go from one moment to another. We can take this position at this point and that position, and people who hunger after a rational, logical neatness are simply missing the point.
Mm-hmm. It certainly does seem like they're part of Trump's modus operandi is disrupting the rational discourse and ways that I find very frightening in terms of the basis of our country and democracy. And I think it's important that we all don't be fooled and maintain some focus on values that are important for us, and find ways to stand up for those values, and that to me, it is this thought process we do, and this rational discourse, and considering what we can agree on as facts, is part of the basis of how we come together. And so, actually, when we run the leadership council for the temple, we don't sit around and just say non sequiturs, you know. Because
we
it's not like one koan after the other. We actually look at the budget, and we actually have a plan, and we say, "Well, how much is it going to cost us to keep the building open?" And so I think there is an assault on the positive side of the rational mind. A very concerted assault on that, which is quite, I think, is what authoritarian regimes do. And so I think we have our work cut out for us. And it's at such a meta level, too. It's not just the policy, but this whole confusion and this undercutting of a consensual reality. So we here are trying to undercut consensual reality. But then to come back to consensual reality, I mean, that's this coming back full circle, not just there's no enlightenment, no life, and no death. Oh, there is enlightenment and delusion. There is life and death. So it's this coming back to be able to function skillfully in this world where people are hungry and where violence is happening, not just to think we can create some imaginary world.
It is the undercutting of conceptual reality and the way in which, not just today, but in many historical circumstances,
right.
That has become the basis for a alternative to reason.
That's been truly disturbing.
And I think here we have to look at intention. You know, so the intention here in undercutting consensual reality is to help us to wake up to see what's really here, what we call reality. I think maybe the president-elect has a different agenda for undercutting consensual reality that has to do with power. Right? That he wants to get everyone confused so that he can take power. Here, we're actually talking about empowering, getting to that clearer place. That and whatever we intend, consensual reality has to be seen through. And again, the intention for why we would do that is important to clarify our intention. Thank you.
I just want to put in a request for a future Dharma talk. I just keep hoping somebody will talk about the fly and the zazen. the fly and the zazen of the frog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've skipped. I think that was in section 2.
Yeah, probably too late.
You never know.
The fly apparently was put in there to honor Trudy Dixon, so the woman who edited these talks and really put the book together in some very major way. She was quite ill, and I think she died before the book actually came out. And I don't know whether it was her drawing.
It was her husband.
Her
husband was an illustrator, and he was asked to do an illustration for the book. And he said, all I can do to honor Trudy is to draw this fly. So at a certain point, open the book, and there's nothing there. There's a blank page and another page that's blank with a little fly. Have you all seen that?
It's in the Kindle edition, too.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Suddenly, you're scrolling. Yeah, it's great. So that's my understanding of it.
Yeah.
And the frog, sitting like a frog. Suzuki Roshi uses that metaphor. The frog just sits. Doesn't have any agendas. Just sits. So, there you are.
Yeah.
Other requests now. Maybe that'll be enough for tonight. Thank you. So we'll sit for another few moments.